Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to actor Mark Margolis, whose performance in the fourth season finale of AMC's Breaking Bad was nominated for an Emmy Award. Stick around, and please don't ring any goddamn bells for the next 15 minutes. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by the Stitcher app for mobile devices. Give it a test drive today at stitcher.com/mrmedia, Mr. Media. I love this free radio app, and I think you will too. stitcher.com/mrmedia. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of mouth breathers, ear wigglers, toe tappers, and other social malcontents who envy Mark Margolis and his cheek twitches and ding-dong in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. There are at least three elements to an award-winning acting performance. First, it starts with the source material. Is the writing sharp, evocative, and provocative? Second, does the actor understand the words on the page, and can he extend their value from words to performance? Finally, is the audience emotionally moved by the actor? Now, if you've been watching the AMC drama Breaking Bad over the years, you've had the privilege of seeing some extraordinary performances by the lead actors, Bryan Cranston, Aaron Paul, and Anna Gunn. But some of the greatest moments have been of the smaller, more isolated type, like the ones featuring my guest today, Mark Margolis, who plays, or should I say played, Hector Tio Salamanca. You remember Hector, the notorious, bloodthirsty bastard we met as an old man and later in flashbacks as a young badass. As Hector, Margolis never says a word, communicating extraordinary viciousness and anger with nothing more than a glare and the pounding of a little bell. Margolis was so terrifying as a bell ringer that he's been nominated for the 2012 Emmy Award as Best Guest Actor in Breaking Bad. And hopefully he doesn't have that damn bell with him now. Mark Margolis, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks. I like the way you broke it into the three sections that are needed to arouse interest. That was interesting.
Well, directors, I'm sure they have a place in there somewhere, but I was trying to be brief.
No, but actually, I liked your other opening also, where you spoke about who you were, who your audience was. We once, years ago, wrote a grant proposal, and they asked who we would be performing for, and we included motorcycle enthusiasts. I think you should throw that in. We always thought we got the grant money because we got a chuckle out of them, and they're reading a lot of dry grant proposals.
Right.
So that's a one that's guaranteed.
Well, good. I'm glad that you enjoy that. We try to get a laugh here while we're on our way to the more serious stuff. And I got to ask you, what is written in a script that conveys a guy whose primary manner of communication is pounding that goddamn bell? What do you read on the page that becomes this guy?
Like if you go all the way back to the second season where I was first introduced in a shack way out in the desert with my nephew Tuco.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall that?
I absolutely do. Tuco was...
All right. That was the first show I was in. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there was nothing about coming back to do another one. It could have been just one time, but it was a fascinating guy. But to answer your question, what's written on the page when Walt and Jesse, Brian and Aaron, were talking about putting rice in Tuco's tacos.
Right.
And I was just sitting there with the TV. On the page, I think it said something about T.O. I don't remember. Did it say T.O.? What was on the page originally had something to do with the fact that he's kind of in a catatonic state, but his mind works.
Mm.
He's not really out of it.
And we don't find that out. We don't know immediately
that his
mind
works.
But I mean,
you're asking, when you were talking about can an actor take the words on the page and transfer it into action, whatever. In my case, except for two flashbacks, there were no words on the page. But everything is still pretty much the same. You know, I mean, it says, you know, at parts that he's may have said in the script, I don't remember at this point, probably did, that he starts pounding the bell to get Tuco's attention. And so, you know, when you get into your intentions of, you know, the page says he pounds the bell, but as a person, it's why am I wanting to get his attention? What's the issue? Where are we? What's happening? It's all there for you, in other words, in answer to your question, what's on the page?
Mm. What's interesting?
Once you think through the logic of what's going on here, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? Why do I need to do it? Why don't... You know, the ultimate question, once had a teacher who said a neat thing to an actor. She said, when you come out, and she was talking about the theater, which is where we all started, most actors, a lot of actors. She said, when you come out from the wings onto the stage and you say something to so-and-so, she said, why not come out and not say it? Just because the playwright says you say it, why say it? And that gets you to thinking about what you're doing.
Hmm.
You know, I said to somebody, asked me about, is it difficult to do a guy who doesn't have the ability to speak? I say, the thing is that we're doing something, and in life, we do things where we use words to accomplish what we're doing. Sometimes we don't have to use words. If you have a cabin in the woods, I come to visit you. It's a cold day. I want to light a fire. I look out on your porch and there's a pile of wood. I don't have to say a thing to you in the other room. I bring it in and light a fire. However, if I'm cold and you're in the other room and it's your cabin, I then have to say, Mike, where do you keep firewood? You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we can do what we need to do without, we can often do it without words. Words help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, acting, most people think, is about words. They always say, how do you remember all those lines? You don't really. You just, you need to get locked into what it is you need to do and why have a strong need to do that. And the words will come. Because the words are what helps you at those times get whatever it is you really need, if it's really in you. Boy, I'm talking a lot of shit, right?
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, I understand that you took some of the mannerisms for Hector from someone, I guess, a family member who'd been through a stroke. What I wondered is, in addition to that...
In Florida, down in Tamarack on the West Coast, she was there for 8 years. And every time we'd go to visit her, and I'll let you finish your question, but
sure.
My mother-in-law, Shirley, who had been an Earl Carroll Follies dancer in the 1930s or something, anyhow, she was hooked up to tubes. It was a terrible scene. Years later, they finally let her be disconnected. She was somewhat paralyzed, couldn't talk. She used to do this weird thing when we'd come in to see her the first time, and even every time we... A lot of time when we were with her, the left side of her mouth, her lips, would wiggle out and away in weird movements, like somebody chewing tobacco almost.
Huh.
And I stole that from her. It's an homage to Shirley. Otherwise, I just had to relax in that wheelchair because we've all seen in the building I live in New York, when I go outside, I see two or three people that had strokes that are sitting with a home care attendant in a wheelchair. Basically, the body's kind of dead from the neck down with a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just a matter of relaxing into some things.
And what about
What were you going to say before I started?
Well, I was going to ask you that. So I understood sort of, you know, where the stroke part comes from. Where does the ferociousness come from? Is that from Hector's frustration at being stuck in that chair, or is it something more? I mean, where did you get it from?
Well, it's more because this is a pretty rough guy to begin with. Before I had my stroke, I'm part of the cartel.
Mm-hmm.
I deal with certain people in certain ways. There's a lot of my ferociousness was going at Giancarlo Esposito, who from my point of view, is a total outsider to who I deal with and who I trust. It was even spoken of in the episode, the flashback, where I was on the phone when I tried, when I was teaching the kids a lesson by seeming to drown one of them.
Mm-hmm.
The two guys that grew up to be the killer brother, the twin brothers. And some of it comes of the frustration of being locked in that body. And I think then there's a small part of it, anybody that knows me would agree, that Mark Margolis is a pretty nasty, miserable bastard to begin with. There is some truth in that.
I find that a little hard to believe based on just this
conversation. Now I have friends that speak of me as a curmudgeon.
Well, okay. But
a guy once, I was sitting at a table with a bunch of American actors and some East European actors. And this guy said to the group of East Europeans, he said, I love the way you people function. You have a darker view of life. Americans always think everything's going to turn out all right, except for Mark Margolis, who always knew it would turn out badly. I loved what he said. But that was his take on me, and there's some truth in that. I'm kind of a downer of sorts.
Had you ever played someone as badass as Hector?
Well, the guy in Scarface, who I used, G. Gordon Liddy, wrote a book called Obsessed. You know, the guy that was the Watergate burglar who had been a district attorney.
Yeah, radio host.
He ended up as a radio host.
Yeah.
You do the crime, you have to do the time on radio. The guy I played, Alberto, was the reason I used Liddy was this book. My character was obsessed the way Liddy describes himself in his early days in the book. And I think Alberto was a pretty nasty person in a much more subdued way. It was contained. Though when I got in the car with Pacino in New York, there was a certain viciousness going on my part in the argument with him as we followed a car. So,
and are you able to go in and out of this character? You know, when you've played Hector, like when you're on set, do you have to stay in that character between takes, or are you able to relax and then just resume?
I can relax. Yeah, it's an interesting question because, I mean, I come from, I guess, what's called the method school. It's a terrible word to use. My great teacher was Stella Adler, and I later went to Lee Strasberg, though. Everything that's in me, I don't even know what it is anymore, all comes from Stella. So I heard Al Pacino say something that really resonated with me in an interview, I think, with Charlie Rose or somebody. Charlie said the same thing you just asked. Do you have to stay in it all the time? He said, well, when I was younger, yeah, I did. Now I'm much more sure of myself, so I can come away from it and then get right back to it when we do it again.
Hmm.
29 years ago, when I did Scarface with Pacino, we were in a car in New York waiting to do the scene where we follow the diplomat and blow him up. I'm going to blow him up. We were sitting there for about 3 hours while they set up cameras and camera cars. And there were two guys in the back, and I was in the passenger seat. Pacino was at the wheel. And this is a break, like you're asking, do you have to be in character then? I wasn't. The guys in the back weren't. All of a sudden, Pacino started talking right away, and he was talking shit, in a way. He said, if we put all our faces together, we might be able to make one handsome guy.
Oh,
and it was one thing after another like that, and I thought, what is wrong with this guy? This is like being back in high school, listening to that kind of shit. And then after about 20 minutes of listening to this, I woke up and I said, this is not Al Pacino talking. This is Tony Montana talking shit. This guy is staying, which is, you know, marvelous to do. There were times when I did this when I was younger. I once played Dracula in a production in Massachusetts at a regional theater that was located on a college campus. And in the early evening, I used to crawl up a small tree and sit in the high limbs and look at who was walking across the campus that I was later going to attack. I think if I had been found up in the tree, I would have been arrested. but it got me into Dracula's mind. So the answer that I've just dragged out for about 10 minutes is, as you get older and more sure of yourself, you can come away. However, there are parts, even when you're older, that are very complex. I'm going to be in something, and I'm leaving for in a couple of days, that it'll be that, where you might have to stay very close to the character and not come away during the breaks too much, or you're going to be in trouble when you have to come back to it. It depends on, you know, how difficult the project is and how complex. The more complex the person is, it's a bigger job.
Well, Mark, before we have to wrap up, I want to ask you about this incredible honor, this Emmy nomination for Breaking Bad. How did you find out, and were you surprised, or were you somewhat expecting it might happen?
I knew it. The day before, knew they were going to announce nominations. I think AMC tried to get me nominations the year before also, but I'm lazy, so I was sleeping late. Not that late, but late by most people's. The phone rang, and I didn't want to get up, and I couldn't hear what the message was. And then I got up and had two cups of coffee and played it, and it was my manager and my agent on Rob Coker and Robert Aderman. They were on a conference call, congratulating me, saying that. So then I went out and smoked a cigarette and thought, why the fuck didn't this happen to me when I was in high school?
Good question.
I could have had a couple of dates.
So you would have used it to get laid. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, in the 1950s, there was nothing you could use to get laid. As lucky as you could get was maybe to remove a bra. I guess there are a few guys that was a whole different time. The sexual revolution happened later. I once spoke to a high school buddy who was a really good-looking guy and a jock, and I asked him if he had gone the whole way, made love with somebody, and he said no. The only guy he knew was this one other guy who was also a famous jock and very good looking, and he said he's the only one in our whole school, our whole graduating class, which was a couple hundred people. That was a different time.
And so what impact has the nomination had? Are you getting laid now? Are you getting jobs?
I'm in the middle of a 50-year marriage.
So the answer could be yes or no.
she's still, when I told her I had been nominated, she was about as excited as if I told her I had a subscription to The New Yorker.
Oh, come on.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No. It's been very nice. It's been nice.
Has it brought more work or more offers or better offers?
I don't know. I think one of my agents got a little bit of leverage in a negotiation that happened to be going on at that time. But no, I don't know that maybe in the future it will. No, I don't have. I'm going to do a film in Iceland with Darren Aronofsky in a couple days that Russell Crowe's the lead in, Noah, which is the biblical story of Noah. He's playing Noah.
Wow. But
that I had before this happened.
Well, and you've done a couple of his films before. You did The Wrestler.
I've done all of his films, actually. The only one I didn't appear in was Black Swan, because it was a tiny little scene that they did no coverage of, so it didn't exist in the final cut. But yeah, I've been in everything since Pi.
You could have been in the background in tights or something. Come on.
I was actually in the background in a big scene with patrons of the ballet. I had a little scene there as the head patron, but now all you see, if you don't blink, you can see me standing among the patrons in tuxedos. It's a milestone, after all.
All right, well, I've got one more question for you.
I got a congratulatory telegram from Michael Slovis, who's the director of photography of Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. He's also nominated. He's a marvelous, very bright, witty guy. He said, "Congratulations, it's amazing and coming so early in your nascent career."
Very nice. Good to have friends.
Yeah, he's funny.
All right, last question. This may be the dumbest thing you've ever been asked. You'll have to tell me. But how might you play a guy like Hector differently if Breaking Bad was not a drama but a comedy?
That's funny.
All right.
Well, I'd certainly drool more. And then stare at the drool to get a couple laughs. It's a funny idea. That's a marvelous idea. A lot of things would go in different directions.
Maybe we can get you a role on Modern Family, and you can do that.
I'd probably wear a feathered cap or something. Something that a Follies girl would wear. Just for to have some panache.
Nice. Very nice.
I'd probably ding every time a pretty girl walked by. Or I'd rate them by the dings.
Oh, that would be good.
She was a 10 ding or a 2 ding or a 6 ding. No, that's the, you said it was that the stupid? No, that was an interesting question.
Yeah, well, that's a good answer.
I'd give it a 10 on a 1 to 10. Not a stupid question.
Well, then I definitely know it's time for me to pull in the carpet and call it a day.
To leave while things are going well. All right.
Well, folks, listen, you aren't likely to see any new episodes of Breaking Bad featuring Emmy Award nominee Mark Margolis as Hector Tio Salamanca. But if you don't know why, let me steer you to Season 4, Episode 13 for his nominated performance. And, Mark, do you have a website? Are you on Facebook? Is there anywhere online people
no,
can find
I,
you?
No, I declined Facebook when a cousin contacted me and said I could have 6 more friends. I never got it. I said, I'll email with you. I don't want to know your friends. No, I don't have any of those things. I don't have a website or a Facebook or a Twitter.
All right, well, people can find you on Breaking Bad.
I have a terrace.
You have a terrace. So you'll wave to us from the terrace, right?
It's high up, yeah. It looks out at the Hudson River. It's very. I can almost see St. Petersburg. I can see Russia.
Oh, you can see Russia from your kitchen. Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Mark Margolis, thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Media, today, and good luck with the Emmy. We'll be crossing our fingers for you.
Well, if I have it arranged already that if they don't pick me, Kanye West is going to jump on the stage and have some things to say about it.
I will record that. That would be great. Mark, thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest 2-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, the TechCrunch headlines, and the Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening.
Hey, folks, this is comedian Mark Maron, and what the fuck? Why are you listening to Mr. Media Radio?